I am, my position is sponsored through, in part, through a challenge grant from the National Trust for Historic Preservation. It's called the Partners in the Field Program. The position and the grants are aimed at helping statewide and local nonprofit historic preservation organizations bring programs and services to typically underserved areas.
The list this year has six historic places that are new to the 2011 list. And before we get into that list, tell me what happened to the six that these six replace.
Well, on a couple of them, we had wonderful success stories. One of those is in the Odessa Public School Building. I think we successfully convinced the people in Odessa and Lafayette County to retain their historic high school building, and they are currently planning to use it for municipal purposes. Most of their city hall offices will move into the new school. So we're really happy about that, but it's laced with successes and setbacks. One of them, the Clark County Courthouse, in January, much to our dismay, was demolished. This was their fourth time at the polls dealing with this issue. I think that voters were led to believe that there wasn't any other choice but to tear the courthouse down and build a new courthouse. So their county council, their county commission, had the courthouse demolished this in January of this year. Another setback was in Pierce City, where in 2003 they had a really horrendous tornado there. All of their municipal buildings were basically ruined by the tornado, leaving only the public school building, the only municipal building left. And it was because it was in a different place. It wasn't on the main street of the town. It was up on a hill. Unfortunately, a lot of boards of education and school administrators kind of see it their legacy to leave behind a brand new campus for their students, and the Pierce City School was another place in which the county finally voted after, I think, three or four times to go ahead and replace the old school building with a new school building. As I said, we're kind of peppered with successes and setbacks, both in the number taken off for adverse reasons as well as positive reasons.
It seems to me that school buildings would be especially tricky to deal with, though. If they've got any age on them, trying to find an alternative use for them or do something else other than tear them down is especially challenging for any school board, or especially in a small town. Would I be correct?
Indeed. A lot of we are becoming quickly urbanized, our state, leaving a lot of schools underattended in smaller towns. Some school districts have sought to incorporate with other school districts, leaving usually, if not the largest, the most architecturally significant building in the town vacant. One of the chief reuses, well, we'd like to see all the school buildings still used as school buildings, and we do believe that it makes sense. We believe that the greenest form of building is restoring existing buildings. That way, building materials don't end up in landfills, and sort of preserving our infrastructure will cost less and preserve more in the long run. One typical reuse for school buildings is senior citizen apartments. And a lot of times developers will pair historic preservation tax credits along with low-income housing tax credits to successfully redevelop school buildings into senior apartments. You know, a lot of older people don't want to have the liability of maintaining their houses anymore. They're getting too old to stay in their houses, but they'd still like to stay in town. This kind of enables people to a lot of times live in an apartment in a building where they went, where they originally went to school, and a lot of their elderly friends can move, also move into these underutilized school buildings as well, making it, like I said, a perfect adaptive reuse for a school building, especially in rural areas.
But what's the biggest hurdle that people who want to adapt these buildings, what's the biggest hurdle they face in doing that?
From what I can figure, I'm not a redeveloper of school buildings. It has to do very much with, as I said, being able to utilize the right kind of financing tools, including tax credits. But it also very much has to do with the square footage of these older school buildings, and making them adaptable and affordable to readapt as apartment buildings for seniors.
Yeah, I would think that a lot of these old schools, heating and air conditioning, trying to plug those into an adaptive reuse of those buildings would be a big headache. But I've seen a few that have turned out very well.
Some really wonderful school restorations have been achieved here in the state.
Well, let's look at this year's list. Are these? You have a list of 15.
We have nine left over from last year, and six additional new ones added this year.
Are they listed in order 1 through 15 as the most endangered, or is it just 15 structures?
No, sir. They are listed in the alphabetical order of their counties this year. We have to decide some way of doing it, and we'd like to be as arbitrary as possible. Unfortunately, if you had a county, St. Louis and St. Louis County are at the end of our list, but we had to decide some way, and we don't think that one resource is more important than the other, that all of these resources that we name to our most endangered historic places are equally as important and equally worthy of preservation.
Well, according to the list, alphabetically, according to county at this point, the Castle House in Butler County is one of your most endangered historic places. A lot of people throughout the state of Missouri are not going to recognize the names of these particular buildings because they're nowhere close to where they live. So tell me a little bit about the Castle House in Butler County and what makes it worth saving.
The Castle House, the Williams, it's officially known as the Williams Gears House. It was built in 1892. It is probably the one of the most elaborate Victorian era houses left in Poplar Bluff. It's in a part of the community where it's a historic part of the neighborhood where there are lots of great old homes. Unfortunately, in spite of the owner's good intentions to rehab the property, the cost of repairs have prevented the owner from making significant upgrades. The city has had no choice, even though they are supportive of retaining the house, the city's had no choice but to condemn the property for occupancy. So we're hoping, obviously, with all of our endangered historic sites, we're hoping to call attention to them, and in this case, hopefully find a developer and encourage listing on the National Register of Historic Places that would also, again, make it economically feasible for a rehabilitation to take place here at the Castle House in Poplar Bluff.
Does listing this building and the others on the list, on your list, as well as maybe getting them on the National Register, free up any potential grants or other funding that would further the restoration?
I get calls every day from people asking me, I have a historic house, what funds are available to me for restoring my house? And sadly, I have to tell them, as far as bricks and mortar construction goes for buildings, their grants to do that are few and far between. There may be some for national historic landmarks, but for regular run-of-the-mill, if you will, National Register historic properties, the largest financial incentive to us still here in Missouri is our historic preservation tax credits. That's a state tax credit, which provides a credit to the renovators of the house of a 25% credit on the cost of qualified rehabilitation expenses for rehabilitating, for putting substantial, money back into a building. Again, like I said, that's the most That is the best financial incentive that we have to recycle and rehabilitate buildings here in Missouri. Additionally, the state program offers the tax credits for both residential and for commercial buildings, and they can be coupled with a federal tax credit. Although the federal tax credit is for income producing properties only, so it would have to be a business, an apartment building, a farm, you know, something like that, which actually is owned by a business and run as a business.
And your historic preservation tax credits are squarely in the crosshairs of some legislators who want to do a lot of tax credit reforming right now, isn't it?
Time and time again in the legislature, just about annually in the legislature, we encounter problems with some very well-intentioned representatives wanting to increase our income stream in Missouri and see the tax credits as a drain on our income stream. According, though, to the numbers that were released by the Department of Economic Development, just through the tax credit's been around a little over 10 years, and just through the tax credits alone, Missouri has had over $4 billion of renovation done just through that program. So that's just tax credit dollars, but $4 billion that have utilized the tax credits. So we kind of like to tout it as one of our ways to make historic preservation equal economic development in many communities. And the tax credits are being used in many, many communities throughout Missouri to very good advantage.
The Jefferson School in Cape Girardeau County, it's one of those schools.
Yes, sir. And actually, this was, and we have other traditionally African-American schools on our most endangered list and have sort of almost annually for the past several years. This school was originally closed when, closed and at the end of the 50s during the age of integration for our schools. It had been a traditionally African-American school. It, too, has been abandoned for a number of years and has been neglected. Part of the roof has collapsed. We think that the building will obviously need extensive repairs to make it livable again. There has been one developer who has been interested in it, but has really kind of shied away from the owner's asking price of $60,000 for the school building. So we're hoping that listing this will encourage maybe the owner to sell at a lesser price, or for at least calling attention to the building so that it can be reused and recycled. The developer usually and actually has done other projects in Cape Girardeau in school buildings.
You list some historic bridges. It seems to me bridges are probably peculiar to your list because it's so easy to replace them.
Absolutely. A lot of times, especially in these days of economic stimulus, people say you want to pump money into the economy, build a road, build a bridge, whatever. And we are, a lot of our bridges are reaching the age where, a lot of them consider old, obsolete. But we're seeing a lot of our bridges lost at an astonishing rate, and not all of them are, structurally incompetent to carry traffic. We did have, I believe, is our first bridge, the Boonville Bridge over the Missouri River. It was taken off of our most endangered list last year when, thankfully, our governor came to the aid of the citizens in Boonville, worked out a deal whereby the bridge was transferred, the ownership of the bridge was transferred to the city of Boonville. And the Union Pacific, who owned the sort of obsolete bridge, were, I believe, got some tax credits for relinquishing its ownership of the bridge. And now that bridge is probably going to be restored and will be made a part of the Katy Trail there in Boonville. The two bridges that we have, one of them is a small bridge. It goes over the Finley River in Ozark, right outside of Ozark, Missouri. A little two-span through truss bridge. The unique thing about this bridge is that it's called a pin truss bridge, and pin truss bridges are interesting in that they were designed as a sort of a kit of parts, if you will, so that you can pull the pins and disassemble the bridge, which seems to us a really good possibility, even if the bridge isn't allowed to stand in its current position there on the Finley River, that it could be moved somewhere else, perhaps to the to an adjacent park there in Ozark. Now, the other bridge that's on our most endangered list specifically is the Route 66 bridge over the Merrimack. This bridge, of course, has been replaced for most of vehicular traffic by the Interstate 44 bridge, which is just downstream from it. This bridge, however, is actually connects most of the acreage of the Route 66 State Park to the Interpretive Center, which is in an old lodge overlooking the Merrimack River. It's historic in that it's a part of the original Route 66. As well as, you know, its possibilities for heritage tourism here in Missouri. It is the Route 66 Park is the most visited Route 66 destination on all of Route 66 that we know of, with over 250,000 visitors a year in that part of the park. So we think it's still a valuable part of the park, whether it's used for vehicular or perhaps pedestrian, or perhaps both use in the future.
Would it be very expensive to fix it?
It will cost, I believe we have estimates of about $8 million to repair the bridge. We have been talking to a chemist about new, it's a deck truss bridge, so the deck itself, it has to be very heavy since it's a part of, you know, the truss and the deck are sort of one. We've been looking at ways to replace the deck with higher technology, lighter materials, so that it doesn't weigh down the bridge and won't cost as much to replace the deck.
Well, the state penitentiary here in Jefferson City, it's just been kind of deteriorating ever since they moved the inmates out of it, hasn't it?
You're right there. And I mean, speaking of cultural tourism, this has been a boon to tourism in Jefferson City, is that people take tours of the penitentiary. You know, there is a plan, a restoration plan for the penitentiary complex, but we feel that it calls for the tearing down of too many buildings within the complex. You know, the complex of buildings there was more than just a pretty administration building. You know, it was factories that turned out all kinds of products. It was dormitories. It was, you know, dining halls. And unfortunately, it was a gas chamber. And all of those things really tie into the interpretation of that place as a historic site. They are all a part of the penitentiary, too. Even though they're not the pretty part, they certainly are a part of what we consider should be the interpretive aspects of the prison complex.
The William P. Thompson House is up near Trenton in Grundy County, as I understand it. Is that right?
Yes, sir. It is in the Trenton vicinity. It was actually incorporated into Crowder State Park several years ago. It was it's the oldest building in Grundy County. It was built in circa 1834. It was originally a beautiful Greek Revival eye house. It was owned by a physician. He had an office in one of the downstairs rooms. It originally included the main house, an in-ground storage structure, as well as a slave cabin and the family cemetery. Unfortunately, almost all of the rest of the buildings are lost, with the exception of the in-ground storage facility. And the house, when it was incorporated into Crowder State Park, was still pretty much intact, and it's kind of out in, you know, it's kind of very secluded in a part of Crowder State Park, so that it's kind of out of sight and out of mind. And the building deteriorated for many years. The citizens of Grundy County believed that they were going to have the house restored as a part of the Crowder State Park. After the building sat for so long, the Division of Parks decided that they were going to interpret the house as a ruin. But there's a very solid group of there in Grundy County called the Friends of Thompson House. They have sort of tirelessly advocated for the restoration of this house that a lot of people already considered lost. They were able to persuade Parks to grant them the parcel of property that included the house and several acres there around the house, and they've raised so far $40,000 to renovate the house. So we figure they're going to do it with or without us, but we wanted to call attention to their, obviously it's going to take a lot more than $40,000 if you've seen a photo of this house to restore it. So we're hoping that, realizing that that's far shy of the amount needed for restoration, the $40,000, we'll hope to raise additional interest and hence additional funds for the restoration by including that on our most endangered list.
Is that one of your prime examples of an old place that that's going to cost a lot, but there are people committed to doing it?
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
Yes, indeed.
How about the Wheatley Provident Hospital building in Jackson County? Hospitals, I would think, would be particularly challenged, but what about this one?
Well, this is, again, another traditionally African-American historic site. The Wheatley Hospital began in a 1902 building that used to be a school. It was expanded in the 1920s into a hospital that both provided health care for and training for African Americans in the health care field. It unfortunately is in a neighborhood that is kind of surrounded by urban renewal. A lot of abandonment. It's very close to the Jazz District in Kansas City. It has been vacant for some time, and our hope is, well, I think one of our original hopes was that we would be able to use it in part of their transit plan, maybe for a transit facility, but that hasn't panned out either. So the building is on Kansas City's dangerous buildings list now, and we're still trying to find developer for this building that's been on our most endangered list for about 3 years running now.
The municipal auditorium in Lexington. I think of municipal auditoriums just being big barn-like structures. Is there something more to this that makes it historic?
This is a big structure. What makes most of our historic places that we're trying to save important are people, and the people, and this is a kind of an austere style building. It's an Art Deco building. It's kind of rare in that it's a WPA project in this area of the city where we don't see a lot of WPA architecture. It's an interesting Art Deco, streamlined, modern building. It's important to the community because it has served as their. It was built when they lost their opera house there in the 20s. And it's been kind of serving as the meeting point for people in Lexington as soon as it was built and up until 2009 when it was closed. It's where people had their graduations, their wedding receptions. They went to town plays. So we think that both architecturally and from a community-wide treasure aspect that this building is also worth saving.
It sounds to me like we've got another African-American site here with the Zion African-American African Methodist Episcopal Church.
We do, and that's also in Lexington. This was a church that experienced dwindling membership. Its absentee church organization, governing organization, is in Kansas City. Decided that since when it lost its last pastor, that they were going to go ahead and close the church. without really any obvious plans to maintain the building. This was on our list from last year, and actually since we placed it on our list, there has been interest from another congregation, so we may be on fast track for reusing this building for its historic purpose in Lexington.
St. Louis Iron Mountain and Southern Railroad Depot in Madison County.
You know, in a lot of communities in Missouri, when the train quit coming through the town, sometimes the towns almost ceased to exist. Luckily for Madison County, that didn't happen in Fredericktown, where the Iron Mountain and Southern Railroad Depot is. However, since in the many years that it has been vacant, the depot has been used for storage of farm implements, grain, you name it. It's also been the target of many vandals. In 2009, it was hit not too hard, but hit by a tornado. Vandals at one time set fires in this building. In the year that it's been on the our list of most endangered historic places, we have been able to help the community establish who the owner is. They didn't really even know. I think it was through some kind of title snafu. Nobody really knew who owned the depot, so that they do have a clear title to the building now and are seeking a redeveloper for the depot for a new use.
The Russell Hotel in Mississippi County, are hotels especially challenging?
You know, they're not especially challenging, but they are here in Charleston, where the Russell Hotel is. The town has lost population. This is a pretty large hotel. You know, a lot of older hotels have closed in smaller towns in favor of new motor hotels on the fringes of town that have become more popular, the chain hotels. This building had been bought by a redeveloper who had actually started renovating the building, opened an art gallery on the first floor and a restaurant, and we're going to use it as a bed and breakfast, but walked away from it when they found out that their rehab loan was not a secure loan from the bank. So we've been working with the State Historic Preservation Office on the Russell Hotel to try to get it on the National Register of Historic Places again, so that it would be more attractive, financially attractive, to a potential developer who may want to come and renovate the building as apartments, as an office building, or who knows, perhaps as a hotel.
Another place you have in southeast Missouri is the Delmo Community Center in Pemiscot County.
A very unique historic place. Definitely not a high-style, pretty Victorian building. But the Delmo Community Center is very interesting. It's, like I said, obviously not an architectural treasure. But it was it was on the National Register of Historic Places, having its significance in the area of politics and government, social history, and ethnic heritage. This community center was the historic social and political center of Homestown, which was originally known as South Wardell, which is down in Pemiscot County in the Boot Heel. It was one of 10 communities that was constructed by the Farm Security Administration for displaced sharecroppers and tenant farmers following a 1939 roadside sharecropper strike. You'll remember this is the first time that the Department of Agriculture offered farmers money to leave fields fallow. And obviously the poorest people on the farm, the sharecroppers, lost their sustenance, many times their homes. So the demonstration brought national attention to the plight of sharecroppers. The group eventually constructed 10 group labor home communities, 6 for whites and 4 for blacks, as a part of a compromise reached between the federal and state governments and local partners and sharecroppers. to kind of alleviate poverty and unemployment among Southeast Missouri sharecroppers. Since these days, I think of the 10 community centers, the Delmo Community Center is the only one that, even though deteriorated, the only one that still remains and remains really an important feature of Southeast Missouri's Delmo communities.
The Rock Mechanics Laboratory in Phelps County, is that part of the University of Missouri Rolla, or what used to be the Missouri Rolla?
It is a part of MS&T, yes, the Missouri Science and Technology University. Originally built as a trachoma hospital, which was a disease of the eyes that was prevalent in a band from Kentucky to I believe, Nebraska, obviously trachoma doesn't exist anymore. This building was eventually acquired by MS&T, and unfortunately, MS&T wants to tear this building down in order to provide a larger parking lot for a sports complex that is adjoining.
How close is it to being torn down?
Well, it's on the campus master plan for demolition, I have recently discovered that the building no longer houses the Rock Mechanics Lab, so I don't know. But oddly enough, the Rock Mechanics Lab, which they moved to this building, is in another building on campus, which they've also targeted for demolition. So I don't know. Maybe maybe they're just doing a switch off, and I don't know. I have really no idea what they're planning to do with it right now.
Now you get into the St. Louis area, the Hodgins School Building in St. Louis City, another school.
Yes, indeed. The St. Louis School District, the city school district, has a number of really nationally significant school buildings. You know, we have a lot of William Itner designs here in the city of St. Louis. Hodgins School is threatened by, they want to tear it down so that they can have additional adjoining outdoor space. And, there's lots of vacant land around this building that they could utilize instead of wasting quality 1884 building the early 90s, they received over $400,000 worth of renovations then. So we believe the building's not in that in a really horrible fix or really bad shape that would warrant its destruction.
Well, you've kind of lumped two things together on the next part of your list in St. Louis, the James Collier Marshall Home and the Rock Hill Presbyterian Church. Is that a parsonage to the church, or what is it?
Well, this is an interesting combination for a listing. James Collier Marshall lived owned most of the land near what's now a pretty busy intersection in St. Louis County, Rock Hill Road and Manchester Road. The church's land was actually donated by James Collier Marshall to the presbytery, and they built Rock Hill Presbyterian Church back in 1845. Mr. Marshall's house, however, was on an opposite tract of land there at the same intersection. Commercial development encroached upon the house so that the house actually has been moved twice, and it's been moved to its present location by the generosity of the Giddings Lovejoy Presbytery, who said, well, you could move the historic house to our property. Well, the congregation of the church has now disbanded, and the Giddings Lovejoy Presbytery has decided to sell this parcel of land. So, on a corner where three corners have already been redeveloped for commercial development, this looks like an easy target. And if they do sell the church and somebody decides to put a big box store or some other kind of strip mall there, then the James Collier Marshall house is once again endangered because it's not on its own property. It's on that tract of land, which is owned by Giddings Lovejoy. So it would have to be either torn down or moved again. So that's why this is sort of the double whammy endangered property on our list.
Now, you list the Oak Hill Mausoleum and Chapel in St. Louis County. It's hard for me to believe somebody wants to tear down a mausoleum.
Nobody wants to really tear the mausoleum down, and I believe this is the first time a funerary complex has been on our most endangered historic sites. The mausoleum is really basically endangered due to lack of continued maintenance and funds for its restoration. About 6,500 are interred here, or are entombed here in the mausoleum. It was built in the 1920s. Because of vandalism and lack of upkeep, has some severe, it's a stone building, has a lot of masonry problems, a lot of water intake into the building from the very top to the very bottom. Vandals have come to the mausoleum and stolen its copper guttering and its downspouts, and nearly all of the downspouts have been disconnected from the drains, causing further water infiltration into the building. So that's why the mausoleum and the chapel are both included on our most endangered list this year.
And there's no perpetual care contract or anything like that go with keeping up these buildings?
Well, this is an old building. There's no more income coming in from sales of crypts. It's almost completely full. It's been added to, I think, five times in different building campaigns, and there's just no more revenue. There's no revenue stream coming from this, and the perpetual care fund has been depleted, so that there are very negligible funds in the perpetual care fund just to even maintain the building, much less provide for a building campaign such that this mausoleum really needs.
Well, that brings me to another question. Do you very often find cemeteries that belong on your list? I don't recall having seen very many, but cemeteries are one of these things too, where after a certain amount of time, there's no more income to be generated by them, and they can have a tendency to fall into ruin.
Oh yeah, many, many, many cemeteries have fallen into disrepair and are, you know, obsolete. Some of them, I actually tried to visit one with a client that contacted me up in Monroe County, and the road was even closed so that we couldn't even go to the cemetery anymore. The only reason that I can see why none has been placed on our most endangered list yet is because none of them have been nominated. All of our nominations come from you, the people of Missouri, the litmus test for being important and worthy of restoration or saving is the meaning that these buildings and these historic sites hold to our citizenry here in Missouri.
I suppose one reason that you don't get many cemeteries is, well, first of all, if nobody has any relatives left there that they can remember, there's no reason for them to bring up the issue. But
exactly,
it's not likely that a cemetery is going to be the project of a new redevelopment or a big box store or something like that actually threatens its existence.
Not very often, but I mean, obviously we had that case here in St. Louis with the Lambert Airport expansion. I think they moved several thousand graves away from a cemetery that is now a part of the runway for Lambert Field in St. Louis.
Yeah, in fact, I think I look out my window when we fly right over a cemetery at the end of one of the runways, and that's probably part of that one you're talking about.
A remnant of that cemetery.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you also, I don't mean to keep you this long, but I did want to touch on all of these because we have radio stations in many parts of the state that pick up our broadcasts, and they might be interested in your comments on the ones that are close to them, so that's why I was taking you through that arduous trip of the entire list.
That's fine. I love to talk about historic preservation. It's the thing that I am most passionate about in my life, and I am interested in, as I said, preserving places that matter to you as Missouri citizens.
There are two places on your watched properties list that are both African-American schools. I've seen these names before on lists of one kind or another.
Yes, and actually they've been on our list for quite a few years running. They're probably not super endangered anymore, but still not out of the woods. We were able to get a planning grant for the Banneker School in Parkville from the National Trust for Historic Preservation, so they are in the midst of a capital campaign to restore the building for use as a museum, and we'll interpret it as an African-American school, actually. And the other school, the Lincoln School in Vandalia, you're probably looking at a photo of it boarded up. They did actually, through local support, I think they did fish fries and chicken dinners, raised enough money to get new windows put in their school, and I think that they're on their way to recapturing this for use as a community center for African Americans there in Vandalia.
I suppose a lot of people would look at a list like this and think, okay, we'll just turn these old places into museums. But there's only so many museums you can have.
Indeed. As far as museum properties go, there are lots of foundations and museums, very worthy ones, all fighting for the same dollars out there, for the same contributors. And it's, excuse me. And museums are a very, very tough way to preserve a building anymore. Has to have a more practical use anymore. Although it is my hope that, especially with gas prices at $4 a gallon, that Missourians will choose to do more of what I call staycations and enjoy the historic sites and properties and historic house museums and the like that we have here in Missouri. We have a very rich heritage here in Missouri and lots of really wonderful county museums, historical societies, state parks, and historic sites for people to enjoy here in Missouri. You don't have to go far.
Can you look at this list this year and have an idea, and I'm not going to ask you necessarily to say which ones, but can you have an idea of which ones on this list this year are not likely to be on the list for one reason or another next year?
I have hopes.
Yeah.
As I said, we're working with the State Historic Preservation Office to get the Russell Hotel in Charleston listed on the National Register of Historic Places. That will make it infinitely more attractive to a developer. Likewise, with the Williams Gearth House in Butler County, the Historic Preservation Degree Program at Southeast Missouri State University, I believe some students are working on a National Register nomination on that building, which will really greatly help there. I believe the folks in Grundy County, even though the Thompson House looks pretty forlorn and wasted now, I think that these people, as I said, I think they're going to do it with us or without us. And this is a very driven group of and dedicated group of people. So I have very good feelings for a lot of our buildings. And unfortunately, some of our universities are our largest threats to historic buildings on their campuses. And unfortunately, Rolla has not shown a really great track record for preservation of its existing buildings. So we're hoping to encourage them by continuing to list the Trachoma Hospital, the Rock Mechanic Lab, on our most endangered. I believe the Lexington Municipal Auditorium has made strides. They're currently working on an ADA accessibility plan for the auditorium, which would help them be able to reopen the auditorium and return it to a functioning, income-producing property there for the city of Lexington.
Well, that's
On the Zion African Methodist Episcopal Church in Lexington, we have had, as I said, some interest by a new church congregation in perhaps moving to the building. So we have a very good feeling about that as well.
So it sounds to me like you're pretty optimistic about this year's list.
Well, I'd like to be. We don't always, obviously the committee does not always pick buildings that we think are worthy, not ones that we think are going to make it, always. And that's why they're most endangered. You know, there are plans afoot for their demolition, and this is sort of our last call to people If you think these resources are worth keeping, now is the time to speak up for them before they are gone.
I assume you're already starting to get nominations for next year's list.
Well, we actually start the nomination. We announce the nominations usually about a month to 2 months before the applications are due. So we usually like to do it in. But we're a little late this year. We usually like to do it in May. We did it the first week in June this time. Probably around March, we will announce a new round of nominations for the most endangered list. And that will be on our website. Our web address is preservemo.org.